For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. The U.S. government says two Russian spies and two criminal hackers were behind a massive theft of Yahoo account data. The 2014 hacking of some 500 million accounts is thought to be one of the biggest data breaches in history. Harry Horton reports from Washington.
The Justice Department says two Russian spies plus two hackers hired by the Russians face 47 criminal charges, including conspiracy, computer fraud, and theft of trade secrets. The indictments are the first U.S. criminal cyber charges ever against Russian government officials. Yahoo disclosed the data breach last September and has long believed that state-sponsored hackers were behind the attack. The company announced a larger breach in December that affected 1 billion accounts, though it's not linked that to the Russian intrusion.
Top Republicans in the U.S. Congress say they found no evidence to support President Trump's claim that he was bugged in Trump Tower by the Obama administration. The president made the allegations 10 days ago on Twitter, but now the head of the Intelligence Committee in the U.S. House of Representatives says the claims cannot be substantiated. Our U.S. correspondent Simon Marks reports.
24 hours ago, White House officials said they were very confident evidence to support the president's bombshell allegations would be forthcoming. Now, Congressman Devin Nunes, the Republican who heads the Intelligence Committee, says they found nothing.
There's no evidence that there was a wiretap of Trump and his associates at Trump Tower.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions was asked if he's got any evidence to back the president's claims.
Look, answer, no.
So the ball is now back in Donald Trump's court.
The vice president of the Philippines has sent a video to the United Nations strongly criticizing her own country's war on drugs. Over 8,000 people have died since President Rodrigo Duterte began the crackdown on drug users when he took office in June. William Denzelow has more from UN headquarters in New York.
The video sent by Vice President Lenny Robredo will be shown at the annual United Nations Commission on Drugs event on Thursday. It makes the case that drug addiction is a public health issue and can't be solved with bullets alone. Over 8,000 people have died in Rodrigo Duterte's war on drugs, deaths Robredo calls summary executions. The vice president belongs to a rival political party to Duterte and has emerged as one of the leading critics of the country's war on drugs. The UN has also criticized Duterte's controversial policy. And last year, the president described the world body as very stupid.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Rebecca Foster. What a beautiful day it's been in the great city of Manchester. Spring has sprung, that old cliche, but it was absolutely beautiful. Wonderful warm day. Hope you've had a good one. It is Wednesday, March 15th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Let's get this show on the road.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, the head of economics at Kingston University, the terrific Professor Steve Keane, joins the program this hour. We'll talk about the prospect of another financial crash. We will look at the UK's economic future outside of the European Union, the creation of money. Would you believe Steve was talking to MPs and peers in Westminster a few weeks back about the creation of money? And we'll also talk about why Steve Keane is using Patreon to help raise money for economic research. All of that this hour. And in the second hour, Henry Macko joins me. Now, I've been reading Henry's website for a long time. You will remember Henry as the man who invented the board game Scruples. I bet you played Scruples at some stage. Everybody did. Now, Henry writes about the banking conspiracy, Freemasonry, secret societies, feminism, and the New World Order. He's a fascinating guy, and Henry joins me in the second hour. So a good old show, I think, lined up for you this Wednesday. So there you go. And you can tweet me, of course, at Richie Allen Show's the Twitter handle. And you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. We're broadcasting live on Fab Radio in this great city of Manchester. Good evening to listeners tuning in through Fab, Alternate Current Radio, TuneIn Radio, and of course on davidicke.com. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. David is in Slovenia right now. He'll be speaking at the all-day Worldwide Wake Up Tour event on Saturday there. To find out more about that and where else he will be, just go to theworldwidewakeup.com. All is good. Beautiful day. Isn't it lovely? It's lovely. I was on Facebook today looking around, doing the voyeuristic thing, and you were putting pictures up from everywhere of lovely weather. It's been a good old Wednesday afternoon. Just to remind you, tomorrow Senator Richard Black joins the programme. Early next week, Gareth Porter, the investigative journalist, Rima Labo, got some terrific shows, I think, lined up for you over the coming days and weeks. So just going to look at a few things. You would have heard Rebecca Foster there at the top of the hour on the news talking about the US assertion, law enforcement, the FBI, their assertion that Russian hackers were responsible for hacking Yahoo. We might talk more about that in a few minutes. But today, the Netherlands is the place to start, because voters are still going to the polls there in the first of what is described, or has been described, as three crucial Eurozone elections this year. Now, you will know, unless you don't pay any attention at all to what's going on, that the race in Holland is a two-way battle between the Prime Minister Mark Rutte and Geert Wilders. He's the guy running on an anti-immigration platform. Now, Rutte has said the election is an opportunity for voters to reject populism. Wilders has pledged to take Holland out of the EU, close all mosques and ban the Quran. His Freedom Party, PVV, has been leading in opinion polls, but the BBC said today the polls have suggested right up to yesterday that his support may indeed be slipping. What is interesting even is turnout. People should always pay attention to turnout in these elections. It's been high, 43% of voters going to the polls before 4 o'clock in Holland, which is very, very high, compared with 37% at the last election in 2012. So this election has motivated the Dutch. You do know that, well, you might know, you might not know, but a high turnout often spells doom for the incumbent. Often spells doom. But you know what I say, and I say it all the time to you, and I know you're tired of it, and I know sometimes it might feel like a one-way conversation, but for me it doesn't matter at all, you know. We know that immigration and the degradation of public services is very serious. It's a very serious issue. And we don't shirk from it on this programme, mass migration and what it does. But when you're looking at a racist like Geert Wilders, and he is a racist, whether you like it or not, you know, whether you're voting for him in Holland because you're sick to the back teeth of, you know, austerity, whether you're sick to the back teeth of the EU, whether you're sick to the back teeth of unfettered immigration, turning to this guy is not the answer, you know. I think a lot of people will vote for Wilders today, probably with a real feeling of nausea while they do that. Now, we understand, I think we do anyway, on this programme, why the doors were opened to mass migration, the methodology of it, the real reasons behind it. I won't go into them now. And Wilders and Le Pen and that mob in France, they're bigots. They really are. And ultimately they serve the system because they serve the divide and conquer agenda. That's what I feel. I know some of you listening to this programme don't agree with me. In fact, you strongly disagree with that. But I hold firm in my belief that you just don't get the bigger picture. Because me saying that Wilders and Le Pen are bigots is not me saying that there isn't a serious problem with unfettered migration. is not me saying there's not a serious problem with the centralization of power in the European Union at all. It's just these people are not the answer, in my opinion. We'll leave it there. To the story at the top of the hour, two Russian spies are among four individuals indicted by the US Department of Justice over a huge theft of Yahoo user accounts. The members of the FSB, the Russian intelligence agency, allegedly conspired with criminal hackers. Again, that's according to the Department of Justice. They announced the charges early this afternoon, UK time. Now, Yahoo itself had said that the 2014 breach was definitely by state-sponsored hackers. They didn't offer any evidence at the time. That's pretty much what they said. The suspects are alleged to have targeted Google accounts as well, not just Yahoo. The news networks in the UK are saying, I think they're pretty much reporting this as if it's true, without any question whatsoever of whether there is enough evidence to suggest that this is actually true. I think the news networks here are just going along with it, because it is open season on Russia. Again, let's qualify that by me saying I have no time for billionaire oligarchs, former KGB agents like Vladimir Putin at all. But Russia in this case, you know, in with respect to Syria and what's going on in Crimea, in my opinion, are not the bad guys. So they're being indicted for everything, not just, you know, properly indicted in terms of the actual meaning of the word, but metaphorically indicted as well. The Russians will eventually be accused, as I said before, of the assassination of Kennedy. That's the way it is at the moment. That is the way of it. And what else can you say about that other than, you know, if there's evidence, if there is undisputed, irrefutable evidence that the Russians were hacking these things, well, we'll come out and say, well, there you go, we were wrong. You know, we talk sometimes about the House of Lords, these unelected peers whom are often appointed by political parties for favours rendered and for donations given to these parties over the years. It's completely undemocratic and it's a joke. Well, there was murder today, and we'll get away with these Irish colloquialisms this week because it is the week of St. Patrick's Day. But a senior peer sparked anger last night, this is according to the Telegraph, after complaining that the £300 a day tax-free allowance is inadequate for many in the House of Lords. The guy in question is Lord Hope, the convener of the Crossbench Peers. He suggested the amount was simply not enough to attract applicants from Scotland and Wales. My God. He admitted that members of the Lords received £300 a day just for turning up and travel allowances, but added that's all they got out of it for their time and effort. And if a peer turns up for every day the Lords sit, that peer will earn almost £45,000 per year, which is nearly twice the national average salary. Right? You see what these people really are, who they really are, and what they think of you and me and people like us. Imagine it. £300 a day is not enough to fall asleep after. I mean, these, I'm not going to swear, these guys go to lunches which are paid all expenses, right? And they get pissed up and they come back and fall asleep and collect £300 for that. Nice work if you can get it. It's 14 minutes past the hour. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. And the Trump administration. Well, again, you wonder, will those who blindly supported Trump have the courage to talk about these issues? The Trump administration is pushing ahead with plans to loosen restrictions on drone strikes, removing the near certainty requirement of no civilian deaths outside war zones. There was a requirement before you deployed missiles with drones. The requirement was that you must be as near to certainty as possible that there would be no civilian casualties. Well, the Trump administration is going to destroy that with one fell swoop of the pen. Trump has already given the CIA new authority to launch its own strikes against militants, and this was reported in the Wall Street Journal today and confirmed before people start shouting that Trump is the victim of fake news, confirmed by a senior White House official. The review of drone policy was almost complete, and restraints that were imposed by Barack Obama would be rolled back, allowing the Pentagon and the CIA more autonomy to launch strikes against Al-Qaeda and ISIL terrorists without needing approval from the White House. Are you listening to that? Are you listening to that? NBC News were briefed by the same US official who said some of the Obama administration rules were getting in the way of good strikes. Now, the Trump Nightly News Network, hosted by the Chuckle Brothers, probably won't be telling their viewers this today. Today it's all about Rachel Maddow and Trump's 10-year-old return, tax returner. Is it 12 years old? I don't know. The tax return of Trump that was shared on, was it MSNBC, on Rachel Maddow. It's a non-story. This is the big story. You know, the Trump has given the CIA and the Pentagon, well, you go and drone whoever you want. Don't worry about that. And I'm going to say this for the final time this month, I promise you. It's my opinion the US is under a psyop. The entire country. The system is conditioning them in the States to believe that, ironically, that the system is against Trump. And people are falling for it. Some are not. Some see through it. Some see through it and play the game anyway. Like TNN and the Chuckle Brothers in Austin. It's coming up for 17 minutes past the hour. Don't forget, Henry Macko joins me in the second hour. And in a few minutes' time, the economist Steve Keen joins the programme. I'm really looking forward to that. So it's that Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Dean Smith has just tweeted, Lord Hope, that's a human. It could well be a statement of desperation. That's the story that Lord Hope said that £300 a day, plus tax-free, by the way, plus expenses, is not enough for the Lords to sit. I'm trying to do the mathematics. £45,000 tax-free is like a salary of about £65,000, no? Is it? Something like that? If they were taxed, it would be 65 grand, something like that. Yeah. Hi to Luga, to Tony. Tony said on Twitter, Richie, I heard that Geert Wilders was educated in Israel and it is rumoured that he has a dual nationality. Base Ninja, how are you doing? Nice to hear from you. Michael Jensen, how are you doing, Michael? David Dondre, who's told us this before, as a Yale grad, PhD. David, we don't care if you're a Yale grad or a PhD. Congratulations, but it doesn't impress us. He says, I'm always interested in anything about skull and bones. Used to do research in the same plaza. That explains the Yale grad part of your comment. So I accept that. Okay. Mea culpa. Skull and bones. Yeah, we've talked a lot about these secret societies on the programme before. Hi to Gail. Hi to Terry. Hi to Keith Daly, who sent me pictures of the skies above Cuddington today. Thank you very much for that. Keith, we are going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Steve Keen will be on the programme. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2, ACR, TuneIn Radio, and of course, davidicke.com.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Right, you're welcome back to the programme. Wednesday's show, 21 and a half minutes past the hour. In a couple of minutes, the economist Steve Keen will join me. I'm looking forward to that. He's the author, amongst other books, of Debunking Economics. I mentioned at the top of the show, he was at Westminster a couple of weeks back, I think the first week in March, the first week of the month, and he was addressing peers, I mentioned some of the House of Lords peers, MPs and others, about, among other things, the creation of money. We'll ask him how he got on and how he was received, even, when he joins me in a couple of minutes' time. Before we say hello to him, though, let's take the opportunity to play a tune. Why not? Let's play a tune. Lovely stuff. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter for comments for Steve Keen, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Kings of Leon, they're in Manchester in a few weeks' time. This is Sex on Fire on your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Welcome to the programme. Yeah, 24 minutes past the hour, the Kings of Leon on the Richie Allen Show, Sex on Fire. Don't forget tomorrow, Senator Richard Black joins the programme. He's got a fascinating take on Donald Trump, but also on what's happening in Syria. Senator Richard Black joins us tomorrow. And I want to give you the heads up on Monday. Gareth Porter, a well-known investigative journalist in the US, will join us on Monday. And Dr. Rima Labo joins us as well on Monday. Lovely to hear from you. Thanks for all the tweets. Now, a terrific article, fascinating article in the in the Times Higher Education, go to timeshighereducation.com. I'm going to tweet this so you can read it by Matthew Rice. Economics professor turns to crowdfunding to pay salary. A professor of economics has turned to crowdfunding to pay his salary because universities no longer provide the time and freedom they once gave to original thinkers. Steve Keane, who is currently employed full-time at Kingston University but expects to remain there next year on a quarter-time basis only, hopes to raise enough money via the Patreon website to enable him to continue his work as a public intellectual. And in and on the Patreon crowdfunding page, which I will again tweet out so that if you can, if you want to contribute to that, you can do so. Professor Steve Keane says that almost all the money for economics research continues to go towards mainstream theories, even though they had failed so abjectly. I'm thrilled that Professor Steve Keane has agreed to come on the programme today. You know him, of course, from terrific books like Debunking Economics, and he's a regular guest on national news here in the UK, talking about these important issues. And Steve, thanks so much for coming on. How are you?
Very well, Richie. Thanks for the invite.
I'm delighted you've come on, and the timing couldn't be better. We talk a lot about the EU and Brexit and all of that. Before we do that, though, fascinating that you've turned to crowdfunding, because the ideas that are being funded and are being, you know, monetized, for want of a better word, are mainstream theories that have failed so abjectly. Why are you and others like you not getting that support then?
Oh, it's partly just the culture of universities and the fact that economics is not an area of science like physics, or an area where people expect and accept that if they're going to be a political science department, it'll be somebody who's a lefty and somebody else who's right wing, and you expect to have different perspectives presented. Economics tries to present itself as a science, which it's not. It actually has those range of views internally. There's been a form of internal warfare inside economics between different factions, which over the last 30 or 40 years has meant that the mainstream, what we call neoclassical economics, has really taken over all the major universities and all the major journals as well. And then because they're then treated as a science, and how funding is done and seen as a science by school students when they decide which university to go, it means that all the money for research gets allocated to neoclassical economics, and all the students aspire to go to universities which just so happen to teach virtually only the mainstream. And rebels like myself can only find a position in universities that the mainstream isn't interested in controlling, which are places like Kingston, Leeds University happens to be another one, Greenwich, West England. There are a handful of places around, but for example, your university in Manchester used to be a location for a very, very critical bunch of economists who were called Schraffians. And they were basically eliminated about 30 years ago, and now Manchester has very much died in the wool mainstream.
And the result of this then, obviously, Steve, I don't have to be a genius to figure it out, is that you have able and capable men and women, but sadly coming out of uni, regurgitating the old spiel, the old theories that have gotten us into the situation we're in now.
Yeah, the funny thing is, after the financial crisis, that's not happening quite so easily. So what you find is students, and Manchester was one of the first places where this happened on a grand scale in England, in Britain. I keep on saying England, I've been corrected for it. But in Britain, the Manchester students started saying, look, we're doing all these courses involving maximising utility for consumers and maximising profits for firms. We're not doing any talking at all about what caused the biggest economic event of our lives, which was the financial crisis in 2008. So they organised what was called Rethinking Economics, and they've done some brilliant work, those students, back then and since, with a new book called Econocracy, where they're very eloquently critiquing the absence of critical thought inside economics and the absence of that, particularly in the university system here. So the students now used to walk out regurgitating. Now they're saying, look, this not all of them, but a substantial proportion are saying, look, this just doesn't make any sense after what we've been through, and we want to bring about reform.
Really good. Really good stuff. Now, you were invited to speak at the House of Commons earlier this month, and wonderful that you were, first of all. The question they wanted to hear from you on was, could there be a repeat of the financial crisis of 2008? And before we Before you talk about that, what's fascinating to me, Steve, is because we're paid attention to by the mainstream only because they find us amusing, and only because we, you know, we have a reasonable enough sized audience. And I tweet the mainstream presenters regularly in jest, always in a bit of fun. And whenever they have the Bank of England governor on, Mark Carney or anybody like that, I always jest and I ask Kay Burley or one of the BBC presenters, please ask the governor about the creation of money, about banks lending money. And of course they never do. And there you are in the House of Commons, and amongst the things you're talking about is how banks lend money, how money is created, how it's basically loaned into existence. And this is wonderful stuff. What sort of reception did you get from them? Because you spoke to peers, MPs, officials. What were they making of what you were saying?
Well, in fact, I was invited. There's a group called the New City Agenda, which is a think tank organised by a couple of lords, including Lord Sharkey. And they hold regular seminars there and actually looking for a range of views. So, funnily enough, I began by satirising the views of Chris Miles, who's, of course, an ex-member of the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England, who said in the Financial Times, I think, last week, that there is no crisis in economics, and economists can be criticised for not predicting the financial crisis in the same way that mathematicians can be criticised for not predicting next week's winning lotto numbers. Yeah. And I just started by saying this is total nonsense, and then explained why in my presentation. And then Lord Starkey said, well, in fact, Chris Miles is our speaker next month. So it's openness to a wide range of views, and that's one thing I really appreciate about British culture, that they will let people of very differing views speak in similar platforms. So I spoke to a room of about 200 people. It's a publicly accessible event, just happens to be held in the House of Commons because, hey, they've got access to the rooms there. And a number of MPs, members of the Treasury Committee of the Parliament in there as well. And the questions were actually extremely intelligent. The New City Agenda will publish a transcript of the discussion, as well as me having put the video up on YouTube, so people can have a listen. But they were very good questions, largely from the public, but also from a couple of MPs, and quite regularly aware of what I was talking about in terms of the banks creating money by lending. But I think, of course, my analysis goes a bit further than people's underlying knowledge went. But a lot of realism, and I was actually quite pleased with the degree of engagement I got from the Treasury Committee.
That's brilliant, Steve. We talk a lot about it on this programme. I've had many different economists on the show over the years, some mainstream, some not, some that might be considered conspiracy theorists. You know, and we've talked about the loaning of money into existence and the charging of interest on that and how that's bound to wreak devastation and havoc on economies. And it's occurred to me over the years that so few people understand this, even in my own family and amongst my old friends, my own friends, they just don't understand how wrong that is, how ultimately devastating it is. Now, about the 2008 crash, as far as I can understand, having a look today at what you've been saying, you envisage crashes maybe happening elsewhere in the world, but here in the UK, you think there's not likely to be a crash on the scale of 2008, at least any time soon. Why do you think that?
Well, the basic reason is because to have a crash, you've got to be jumping off a cliff, effectively, of credit. And that cliff doesn't exist for the UK at the moment because you've already had your crisis back in 2008, 2010, and that was caused by a dramatic increase in the level of private debt in England. And as that private debt was rising, that financed a lot of demand, which both partially stimulated the economy and totally overcooked asset markets. Then you reach peak debt, which I think was about 192% of GDP. That was the maximum level of private sector debt, not including the financial sector's own debt, but households and corporations. And it's been falling ever since then to about 170% of GDP. Now, you can have you can have another credit boost as people start borrowing money again, which they're doing at the moment, and spending that money and therefore creating demand out of it and giving you an artificial stimulus for a while. But you've only got a small amount of headroom left before you bang into that effective ceiling for England of close to 200% of GDP is the maximum the economy appears to be able to handle, and then it'll go back down again. And this is the so you're not going to get much of a stimulus out of that spending. So when it goes from positive to negative, when people go from borrowing money to trying to pay their debt off again, you get a small decline, but you don't get a crunch like you got back in 2008. And the crunch won't occur here, but it will occur in other countries which borrowed their way out of trouble back in 2008 and now are paying the price a decade later.
I want to talk to you in a second about the debt jubilee, the QE for the people, which is absolutely fascinating. I also want to point out, by the way, Steve was one of the very, very few people who predicted what would happen in 2008 and called it. And maybe doesn't get as much credit for that as he should do by mainstream commercial media outlets, but he should do because he did say that. And we will talk about that. Steve, we often talk on this show, and we talk to everybody, MPs, economists, people labelled conspiracy theorists, we talk to them all. And the universal opinion, I think, that I get from people who have worked in public life is that our governments, our countries, can't be sovereign if they must borrow money from banks, from central banks, to fund vital services within those countries. They can't be sovereign if they do that and they borrow that money at massive interest rates. Why are we in our collective sovereign countries not responsible for our own fiscal policies? Why don't we print, I don't mean just print a load of money and throw it out to everybody, but why don't we manage money and issue it debt-free, take control of the money supply? I suppose nationalise the economy, as I think Jeremy Corbyn wants to do. I would love to see that happen. It's never going to happen in my lifetime. What do you think of it?
Well, I've got a couple of, I mean, I've got a yes and a no position on that, because there's when you look at where money's created, there are basically three ways to create money. You and I can't print it. We go to jail if we try. But banks have given a social license to lend, and that social license lets them create money. Of course, they create most of it to finance asset speculation rather than actual production, which is why we've got into the stink we're in now. So the banks can create money by lending more than they get back in repayments. The government creates money by spending more than it gets back in taxation, and it's quite capable of doing that because it owns its own bank called, you know, the Bank of England. So the government can run a deficit and finance it. It doesn't require taxes to finance its spending. It creates money if it spends more than it taxes. That's the second way. And the third way is to run a trade surplus. Now, of course, England is not doing the third way at all. You're running a huge trade deficit. You're actually creating money for other countries by turning English pounds into American dollars via borrowing them on the international market. The banks have stopped lending money to the degree they used to do. But if they do lend again, and they're starting to do it now, they're going to lend for asset speculation again, yeah, rather than goods and services, let alone building things like high-speed rail between Manchester and London. So the government should be doing that spending by running a deficit. And what it should be looking at in terms of doing that is not, oh dear, this is terrible, we're going to run out of money, which they can never run out of British pounds, but they can cause a range of effects they don't want. People normally focus upon inflation, but the main thing I'd worry about is making the trade deficit worse than it is right now. So you could actually have effectively national creation of money by the government running a deficit and deciding how much to run in terms of what the economy needs each year. But then does that mean you actually eliminate private bank money creation? Now, given what the banks have done to create the money for the last 20 or 30 years, there's an extremely good argument, yes, they shouldn't be allowed to do it because they frankly can't be trusted with the social power of creating money. All they do is finance asset bubbles and cause booms and busts in the economy.
Yeah.
But I'd rather, at the same time, I don't think you can actually replace what should be the good role of the private sector in creating money, which is giving money to entrepreneurs, which they don't do. That's what I'd like to see them do. But I'd like to find a way of reforming the private banking system so it can no longer finance asset bubbles. But it sets up so that if it's going to create money, it's got to create it by financing entrepreneurs. And on that particular basis, I'd far rather have not the bankers we've got right now, but I'd rather have the type of personality that gets built up in banking where you're expected to take a risk.
Right.
And the trouble about letting bureaucrats just do it, you know, pretty boring decisions get made.
I'm going to argue with you. I'm going to dare to argue with you, and I have so much time for you, Steve. I can't recommend Steve's book, Debunking Economics, enough. He's written other books as well. I'm going to tweet out the Patreon crowdfunding initiative that Steve has started. I'm going to dare to argue with you. I'm going to dare to argue with you. I am. I'm going to get shot to pieces. I'm going to argue with you anyway. Okay. Listen, you're absolutely bang on. These banks got bailed out. There was a promise that they would use the taxpayers' money that bailed them out to revitalise and to restart the entrepreneurs that you mentioned, the you know, the innovative men and women of business. They didn't do that. I'm going to say that, and you can shoot me, that you can call me a conspiracy theorist, and you can hang up if you want. But I look at this, Steve, and I look at what's happening in my country, in Ireland. I've seen what's happened in Greece. And all I can conclude is that these private banks, these private central banks, these private commercial banks, they loaned money to everybody, I think with the express intention of ultimately collecting the real assets then in society. I really do believe that. Now, there are people who say, well, you know, they're not that clever. There are people who say, well, people are not that evil. There are people who say that's just a conspiracy theory. But that's what we see. We see we saw that reckless lending, to Mr. and Mrs. Smith on a very, very small level. We saw it to small businesses. We saw it to nations. People got absolutely seriously into trouble. You look what's happening in Ireland now, Steve, with these vulture funds and hedge funds basically owning all the houses in the country. So that's why I say the Bank of England shouldn't be borrowing, the government shouldn't be borrowing from its own bank. Why would they do that? Why wouldn't they just issue money where it's needed, debt-free, and be done with the banks? But I really want to focus just for a minute before we talk about the European Union and your brilliant Jubilee initiative, which I have a lot of time for, about these private banks lending money that doesn't exist. I mean, they loan money for a house. The money never existed. Never existed, right? So they haven't lost anything. But the person loses their house back to the bank, who gives it to a vulture fund, and the bank have an insurance policy on the bloody mortgage going bad and they cash in again. To me, that's absolute tyranny, and you can't avoid that so long as people can loan money into existence. Go ahead.
Well, that's the trouble. I mean, people don't realise what you've realised, and that is that banks don't actually lend out money we deposit with them. This is the myth that mainstream economics continues spouting, particularly my good mate Paul Krugman, who puts this crap out all the bloody time, and it's just become beyond infuriating that he still repeats the same nonsense. Banks do not lend out what you deposit with them. Instead, when a bank issues a loan, it increases its assets by the amount of the loan. So it lends you £1 million to buy a one-bedroom flat in London somewhere. Then it says, okay, here's $1 million for you to buy the property. And by the way, you owe us $1 million. So its liabilities go up and its assets go up. That's how money comes into existence. And that particular process only is possible because they've got a banking license. Now, a banking license is something you've got to apply to the state to get in the first instance. So in that sense, it's a state-granted right that gives them the capacity to create money. And once you've got that capacity, frankly, any idiot can do it. All you've got to do is give somebody a loan and you whack money in their deposit account, which they spend, and you whack a debt against them just by simple accounting. So it doesn't take any genius whatsoever beyond a keyboard and a spreadsheet, effectively, to do that. And what we do, however, is we treat that debt with the same reverence we do if somebody lends you a couple of $100 out of their own pocket. And if you don't pay back a friend who lends you that money, effectively you're robbing a friend. And we have the sense of moral obligation in anybody who takes out a debt should repay it because they've taken spending power away from somebody who had to save that money in the first place to lend it. Now, that's quite valid when we talk about interpersonal loans. It is not at all valid about banks. They can create far too much money. They can create it for the wrong reasons. But once they've done it, the fact they've got a claim against you through the mortgage is a complete capacity to take over control of physical real assets.
Absolutely.
Simply out of that low social right. Once we realise that actually it's a social right which they can frankly abuse and have abused, then that entire sanctity of bank debt flies out the window.
Steve, I'm so glad you said that. Our listeners are really interested in this, and we hear from people who are fighting with the banks over mortgages that have gone sour, inability to pay, and that. So they're really interested in that, and I'm glad you answered that. I want to ask you in the time that we have left, because time is flying, and thanks for doing it. By the way, you've had a long old day there. I know that with meetings and everything, but no, and they all are long days. The debt Jubilee, writing debt off. Quantitative easing for the people. This is marvellous, Steve. This was a big question. You predicted the 2008 crash, and afterwards, you, only you and one or two others, were saying, why didn't we bail the people out? And here you are now and you're suggesting that again. How would that work?
Well, it's quite simple, because if you look at what quantitative easing is doing, what the Bank of England is simply doing is saying we're going to make a deposit in the bank account of a pension fund somewhere or an insurance company of, $1 billion. So here we make an entry in your bank account, and in terms of that $1 billion, we then take over your bonds. So the central bank's assets rise by the $1 billion worth of bonds that have now got on their books, and the assets of the financial company remain constant. What happens is the bonds that they've got, which are earning interest, go down. The reserves they've got, which don't earn interest, go up. So that's what they're doing right now for QE. All they have to do for QE for the people is do a similar exercise for the public. So they'd simply say, we're going to make an injection of money into your bank account, and that is a liability of ours, which we also count as an asset on the other side of our books, the same sort of story that's done with banks creating debt. So they could quite easily create money just as simply and put it in people's bank accounts. And what I would suggest with the idea of a modern debt jubilee is that would be done on a per capita basis across the entire economy. Everybody gets the same amount of money, whether you're Steve Keen with a rather small bank account or you're Richard Branson with a large one, same amount of physical cash. But if you are in debt, you must pay down whatever debt you have. But if you're not in debt, you get a cash injection. So there's no moral hazard in offense rewarding those who speculated and penalizing those who didn't out of an old-fashioned jubilee. And in terms of the scale of the economic stimulus that would give, I calculated in the submission I've just done to the Parliamentary Committee, the Treasury Parliamentary Committee, that would have... $25 billion created that way would have been as effective for the economy as $200 billion created by standard QE.
That's brilliant, Steve. Can I ask you, have you been able to gauge the reaction of the MPs and Lords that you spoke to? Have you gotten any idea yet of what they think of that?
I'm pretty heartened by it. I mean, again, it's no necessity that it'll turn into a policy recommendation, but there's a willingness to listen to alternative views here. And as much as we'll complain about, Carney and politicians coming up with the same old stuff every time in England, which they obviously do in the House of Commons, there's more capacity to listen to another view here in Britain than there is in America. So I've got some faith that if anywhere's likely to give it a try early on, it may well be ultimately Britain that does it, but it will take a lot of lobbying, and boy, when the finance sector finds this is the idea, they'll be doing a lot of fighting to stop it.
I'm sure they will. I'm glad at least, though, that you're being listened to. Listen, finally, and again, thanks for staying with us. Obviously, our listeners, we were in favour of the United Kingdom leaving the European Union, but because, when I say we, the tiny crew that produces this programme, we're very much anti-decentralisation of power.
Yep.
You know, we're not anti-immigrants or racist or anything like that, far from it. But we understand the devastation that, unfettered immigration can sometimes wreak on vital services. And we understand that is an issue that people are concerned about. But for us, it's about decentralisation of power. I was glad that the people took the vote that they did. Since then, there's been... I suppose it's lessening a bit now, but there were a lot of proclamations of doom coming economically for the UK. Mm-hmm. You were in favour of the UK leaving the European Union. What sort of economic future can the UK have if they do the right things outside the EU?
Oh, quite reasonable, because it'd be a huge effect of the European Union and the whole growth of finance as well has been an overvalued exchange rate for Britain compared to the exchange rate which would make its manufacturing competitive. So you've had in about 20 years, from 25 years, say, from 1990 to roughly now, you've seen the level of manufacturing as a percentage of GDP in England go from about 23% to 11%. And that's been the place has been taken by a huge growth in the finance sector. Now, in Germany, 25 or so years ago, the level of manufacturing is about 23% of GDP. Now it's 23% of GDP. In other words, they've done very nicely out of having an undervalued exchange rate because they get the benefit of the euro, which, of course, would have a far lower value than what would be the case for the German mark if it still existed. So England's had about a 25% devaluation now, courtesy of leaving the European Union. That's given a chance to revive the manufacturing to some degree. It's not going to be easy to do it, but at least there's some possibility of it happening with that change in relative prices. So it's quite possible for England to survive well. And being part of the European trade is a free trade zone. It's the worst performing region in the global economy. So, you know, if you're going to belong to a trade bloc, try another one apart from the European Union.
Absolutely. Listen, Steve, thanks for coming on. Debtdeflation.com. Go there, folks. And I've just tweeted Steve's Patreon page. It's patreon.com/ProfSteveKeen. I've just put it out there. If you fancy supporting Steve, how many times are you going to switch on the radio and hear an economist of note, somebody as well known as Steve Keen, saying that we should bail out the people? It's extraordinary stuff. Steve, thanks for giving us your time, mate. Really enjoyed listening to you.
Thanks, Richie. I look to visit one day next time I come to Manchester.
Well, I'll be buying a drink. Thanks very much, Steve.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye for now. Lovely guy, Steve Keen, on the line to us there from Kingston University, that Patreon initiative. I've tweeted that out there if you want to support that. Great stuff from him. It's exactly 9.5 minutes to the top of the hour. And this is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, TuneIn Radio and DavidIke.com. I will read your tweets. There was plenty of them when we come back from this. Don't forget, Henry Macko joins me in the second hour as well. You don't want to miss him. It's Wednesday, the 15th of March, 2017. This is Radiohead and High and Dry. Also in Manchester soon.
Two jumps in a week, but you think that's pretty clever, don't you, boy? Flying on your motorcycle, watching all the ground. Kill yourself for recognition, kill yourself to never end stop. You broke another mirror, you're turning into something new and old. Don't leave me high, don't leave me dry.
Radiohead and High and Dry on your Richie Allen Show. A good comment from Hubertus there on Twitter. All mathematical numbers, Babylonian money, magic. The future of humanity doesn't have money. That's right. That is right. And if we get Steve back on the programme again in the future, we will talk about the creation of the post money, the post cash society, the cashless society, and where that's going as well. Dean says, prefer the self-trade economy. Mrs. is self-employed and she swaps her body art for a return of an electrician, for example. No cash. I wonder, Dean, will we end up like that again in the future? Will it all, if the centre cannot hold and there is an absolute collapse, will it result in that? You know, we go back to the ancient ways. We help one another out, quid pro quo. Millie said, what money, or what is money? And 20 question marks. Yes, what is money indeed? Well, money is energy, and it is created at the point of the loan by these criminal central banks that Steve was talking about there. David Stanford tweets, loaning recklessly was a chess game, and these feckers think 10 moves ahead. This is right, David. You see, I wanted to talk to Ben Gilroy about this yesterday. He didn't show up, and I haven't heard from him. I don't know where he is or why he left us down yesterday, but I will get into it next week on the programme. It is my contention, and it's not because I read somebody else's opinion or because I'm just regurgitating what somebody else said. I've seen it through my work in commercial media. I've seen the massive collapse of the property situation in the Republic of Ireland and people getting into serious, serious trouble, having bought houses for vastly more than those houses were worth, while eventually, inevitably being unable to pay back the lend, the lending institution, which, as Steve acknowledged, hasn't lost a bloody thing, has lost nothing. The money didn't exist. He talked quite rightly about getting a couple of hundred quid from your friend because you want to treat your, you know, your wife or your mother to something for her birthday, but you're out of cash, you need some help. You know, you're morally obliged to do something to pay that back because your friend had to work to generate that money. Banks loan it into existence and then they take the property. They never lost anything to begin with. Not only that, but as I pointed out, they've also cashed in on the insurance they take out at the point of the loan. They insured themselves against losing that money that never existed. It is so criminal. It's hard to understand why so many people can't get it. You know? It really is. No matter how simply you put it for people, they can't get it. Fluffles tweets, it's called legal fraud. It is. David tweets, I wonder what might be the role of foreign investors, example China, in influencing European markets in future. Hi to Michael, excuse me, Michael Jetson. Keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Hi to Dee as well. How you doing, Dee? Dee was very interested in what Steve Keane had to say. Right, Henry Macko joins me in the second hour. He's a fascinating man. Amongst other things, I mentioned at the very beginning of the programme, he invented scruples, which you must have played at one time or another in your life. But we're going to talk about a lot of different things. We might not talk about scruples. We will take a short break, though, back in 2.5 minutes.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Welcome back. Now, La Antenna tweets, of course they want debt slaves. Focused on chasing pieces of paper, not liberated with time to research. We can't be liberated. Andy tweets, Richie, money won't matter in a cashless world of geoengineering and Fukushima. Yes. Mark tweets, my old gran, God bless her, always stated, don't spend what you don't have. Simple economic mantra. That's a good point. Now, on that, I remember I was still, I still had one foot in mainstream radio. And all we heard was people were living beyond their means. People got greedy. They were buying things on the never never, supported by bank loans and supported by higher purchase. You know, that's what they were doing. And okay, some of that might be true. I mean, I remember not so long ago, even now it goes on. You know, I'm lucky enough that I don't owe any money. I don't have a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. I don't owe any bills, I'm lucky enough. And these predatory institutions are still aware. They know everything about you. And they know you don't know anything. They know that you've not got any children. You know, we'd love to have children, but maybe we will in the near future. But they know all this stuff. And these predatory lenders are still offering you credit cards every second of the day. And they really are. Emails coming through. Richie, why don't you have yourself a nice new Mercedes? Why don't you do that? You can afford that. We've checked your credit rating. Why don't you take out a mortgage, Richie? All this sort of stuff coming through all the time. And they'd love you to take out a mortgage and then screw you to the wall and then they take the property. It's what it's all about, isn't it? It's what it's all about. Coming up for 3 minutes past the hour, Henry Macko joins the programme in a minute. Do keep tweeting me. It's lovely to hear from you this Wednesday at Richie Allen Show. Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Couldn't be any simpler to get in touch with the programme. It really couldn't. Now, let me just remind you that coming up tomorrow, Senator Richard Black joins the programme. We're going to talk a lot about US foreign policy with him. Fascinating guy. And on Monday's programme, Rima Labo is back on the show after a long absence, and Gareth Porter, investigative journalist, really interesting guy, Gareth, who's talking a lot about staged and managed crises, which obviously change the perception of the public and allow these criminals to do whatever it is they want to do. So we'll talk to Gareth on Monday as well. In the meantime, Henry Macko joins us, I should say. He's on the programme in a couple of minutes' time after we hear from Sting. Do stay in touch with our broadcast partners, davidike.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and tune in Radio 2. This is Brand New Day.
How many of your people out there been hurt in some kind of love affair? And how many times do you swear that you'd never love again? How many long and sleepless nights? How many lies? How many fights? And why would you want to put yourself through all that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love is a cruel and bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. Or could it be that what you need the most could leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never want to feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking through an old book in rainy weather. You see a picture of her smiling at you when you were still together. You could be walking down the street. Who should you chance to meet? But that same old smile you've been thinking of all day. I don't be turning the clock to see you, honey. I'll sell the stock, we'll spend all the money. We're starting up a brand new day. Turn the clock on the way back. I wonder if she'll take me back.
From Sting, a Brand New Day on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. 8 minutes past the hour. Really excited about our next guest joining the programme. I've been reading him for a long time. It's about time he came on and had a chat with us. A fascinating guy. You might know him for having invented the board game Scruples, which every one of us has played and enjoyed at some stage of our lives. But he does a lot more than that. He writes and blogs and speaks about the banking conspiracy, Freemasonry, secret societies, satanic paedophilia, feminism and the New World Order. Now, he does this through articles on his website, henrymacko.com. And I'm going to tweet out his website in case you've not seen it before. He is a terrific writer and his articles are thought-provoking in the extreme. That's henrymacko.com. Let's welcome him to the show. Henry, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Well, thank you, Richie. I'm honoured to be on.
Well, we're genuinely honoured to have you on. It's one of those, Henry. I was thinking to myself over the last couple of days, why have you not been on? There's no good answer to that. But here you are now. These are extraordinary times, Henry. I know there's a couple of things you'd like to talk about, and we've got up to the near enough the top of the hour to chat, if you have the time to do that. And we can talk about populism. I suppose we can start there, because there is an election in Holland today. Geert Wilders and Mark Rutte, the incumbent. That looks like it might go down to the wire. Marine Le Pen in France. We've seen the election in the United States of Donald Trump. And, of course, the decision the people of the UK made to leave the European Union. And populism is a term being used by the media and being used by those who resent what's happened as a bad thing. What is populism, Henry? What does it mean? And is it a good or a bad thing?
Well, let me put it in my context. I believe that the agenda of the Masonic Jewish bankers, the central bankers who control the central banks of almost all the major countries in the world, that their agenda is to eliminate race, religion, by which I mean belief in God, family and nation. And the attack on family can be seen in terms of the attack on gender. The attack on race and nation can be seen in terms of the migrant invasion. Populism really is just another word for nationalism and another word for a reaction against this agenda of the Masonic Jewish bankers, which is essentially communist. It's mirrored in the Communist Manifesto, destruction of the family, destruction of nations, and so on. So, like most of us, I'm rooting for the so-called nationalists or populists. But there's an interesting kind of problem with all this, and that is the fact that we've got there appears to be a kind of Masonic Jewish backing for the nationalists as well. I read recently that Geert Wilders was being financed by Zionists in the United States. David Horowitz has a foundation. He's the front for Jewish Zionist money. And then, of course, Donald Trump essentially was supported by Zionist Jews. And then you have Brexit, which was obviously supported by some Illuminati elements, as seen in the Daily Express and the support of the Daily Mail, and the fact that they're actually going ahead with Brexit. So there seems to be a kind of hidden agenda going on here, where you've got essentially Illuminati Jews on both sides of this war. It's almost like they don't care so much what happens as long as they're in control of both sides.
So it's chaos then, Henry, isn't it? It's the creation of chaos, which might go some way to explaining your assertion, and you're right to say that there has been Zionist support for things that you wouldn't ordinarily expect Zionists to support. And we're talking about the Rothschild, Rockefeller, Warburg, Oppenheimer, families that these banking families people don't know anything about. So I can only conclude two things, and then I'll shut up and let you back in, that it's chaos, and they are certain in the knowledge, Henry, that they can click their fingers and make things go back the other way anytime they want anyway. In other words, like a second referendum in the future to get the UK back into the European Union, and a referendum that could be fixed. That's what I derive from this. What do you think?
Well, naturally, because I oppose globalism and oppose the Illuminati agenda, I'm hoping that won't happen. I'm hoping that Brexit will be irrevocable. In fact, I'm hoping the whole EU will fall apart. It seems to be unsustainable, even economically. let alone politically. But its goal, which is to eliminate the national character of the distinctive nations of Europe, is a pernicious goal. Plus, you've got this ridiculous menacing of Russia. I mean, Russians are just scratching their head, and at the attitude of NATO, which is trying to concoct some kind of a menace, a Russian menace, which just does not exist. The Russians have been the epitome of rational and reasonable lately, and so that's another. The way I see it is the Jewish elite seems to have divided itself up between the Zionist faction and the communist faction, but they're both Freemasons. They're all Freemasons. Zionism is Freemasonry. Communism is Freemasonry. And so, but you've got these two factions, so this way they can more or less, again, create the, control the dialectic, because they're on both sides of it. And I gather the menacing of Russia is really coming from the communist, ironically, coming from the communist side of this Illuminati Jewish dialectic.
Henry, can I jump in there and ask you about Donald Trump? Now, I've had a good long-running battle with a friend of ours, Paul Craig Roberts, who comes on the program regularly. And Paul, of course, is just as much an outspoken critic of Zionism as you are. Maybe not as critical as you are, but he is. And we had a kind of a long-running battle before, during and after the Trump election. I remain convinced, Henry, that whether Trump is aware of it or not himself, he is under the direct control of these Rothschild Zionist bankers. It's obvious to me because of the things that have happened since his election, the $54 billion for the military, the blaming of Russia, the appointing of anti-Russian people to the cabinet, the nonsense today about Yahoo, all of this sort of stuff. Where are you on Trump and who he is? Because he, of course, was part of that populist uprising against the tyranny. People voted for him because they were sick and tired of what you described perfectly a couple of minutes ago. So what's going on with him then, Henry?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. That's the question we're all grappling with and waiting for Trump to finally show himself. But the things you mentioned, I agree with you. They're indications that he is not going to be he's not going to reverse the trend as much as we hoped. Yes, he's getting away. He's stopping the attack on gender, which is, the promotion of homosexuality, there's transgender bathrooms, that whole, the whole attack on gender, he's laying off there. And that's hopeful. Hopefully, he's going to stop the migrant invasion. Although, ironically, the migrants are coming up to Canada, literally on my doorstep here in Manitoba, because they're fearful of being deported. So they're going to get a jump on that. So, in cosmetic ways, he's definitely a big improvement on Clinton. But in terms of his big promise was not to interfere in other countries. His big promise was to make nice with Russia and have good relations with Russia. He's not carrying out his promises in that regard, and that is troubling. Also, I think North Korea is obviously erratic, and I think it's quite possible that Trump might provoke North Korea into doing something I think something very bad could happen around North Korea, because North Korea needs to be handled like, sort of like a child, a child with atomic bombs, so you basically have to
It's a real it's a real unknown, Henry, isn't it? I think you're spot on there, because we don't know very much about the leaders of North Korea, the current leader, his predecessor who died, of course, Kim Jong-il. We don't know anything about these people. We know they're narcissistic in the extreme, maybe far beyond anything Trump has proven to be. And they do have the nuclear bomb. It's a really fascinating thing. We might come back to that in a minute. I just want to do a quick update. 19 minutes past the hour. Henry Macko is on the line. We're delighted to have him on. Go to his website and bookmark at henrymacko.com. Henry, I want to challenge something that you said earlier on, because I agreed with it. I agreed with what you said, but there's an inherent contradiction that I can't even answer. What I love about reading you is you talk about these banking Masonic families and the ultimate plans they have for the world. And I totally understand people getting excited about the nationalist movements in Holland, in the UK, and of course in, in France. But at the same time, I'm mindful of the fact that Marine Le Pen and Geert Wilders, they probably haven't a clue or have any idea of what you talk about on your website. And when they talk about migration, and I mean, Wilders talks about banning the Quran and banning mosques and all this sort of nonsense. To me, that's dangerous nonsense, that he's not talking about shutting down migration for the real reasons that you talk about, Henry. And this is the inherent kind of contradiction in supporting these people. Is it a case of, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, with the support for these people? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Honestly, I don't. But, you know, my attitude to migration is that once you let the people in, they should have religious rights. But the key is to not let them in the first place. Every country has a right to maintain its own cultural identity.
Of course, I agree with that. 100% agree with that. Yeah.
One of my most important themes, though, is that Western society has become a satanic cult. That one of my most important themes is that Judaism is in fact Satanism, and that humanism and secularism are just disguises for Satanism. And I don't think because of their control of all the media and all the education, we're just not aware of what deep trouble we're in. I mean, that's to my mind, that's the underlining theme, is we're all being satanically possessed, and Western society is a satanic cult. And this is actually the aim of Judaism. I've got a quote here. Do we have time for me to read it?
We've got plenty of time, Henry. We've got 20 more minutes to talk. If you've got 20 minutes, yeah.
This is a quotation from a newspaper called The Jewish World from 1883, and I choose it because I think it's particularly true. It goes like this: the dispersion of the Jews has rendered them a cosmopolitan people. They are the only cosmopolitan people, and in this capacity must act and are acting as a solvent of national and racial differences. The great ideal of Judaism is that the whole world shall be imbued with Jewish teachings, and that in a universal brotherhood of nations, a greater Judaism, in fact, all the separate races and religions, and I could add nations, shall disappear. As a cosmopolitan people, Jews have passed the stage that the national form of separatism represents in social life. They have made the whole world their home, but their activities in literature and science, by their dominant position in all branches of public activity, they are gradually molding Gentile thinking and systems into Jewish molds. I mean, that is a brazen but true statement of a brazen agenda. I mean, they're coming right out and saying, you know, that we are going to, we are a solvent. We are going to dissolve all other nations and races and cultures and religions.
Well, that's Zionism, isn't it, right there? That's the definition of Zionism. Because for me, Judaism, Christianity, Islam are no better or no worse than each other. I don't equate Judaism with Zionism. And it's my belief, Henry, and I'm sure, you know, you'll have a counterpoint to make to it, that ultimately this Rothschild Zionist banking conspiracy, that the ordinary Jewish man or woman is as much a victim of it as anybody else.
But what, well, yes, that's my point.
Yeah, and what you described is perfect, by the way. You know, you're absolutely right to say, in my opinion, that dissolving of nation states, the decentralization of power, the melting away of culture was always the end game of the Rothschilds. But because you're new to this particular program, but you won't be new to my audience. Many of my audience will know you before. But we go out on mainstream radio here as well. And I don't want anybody to get the impression that you're saying that this is a Jewish, you know, it's a Jewish conspiracy. It's a Zionist conspiracy. And Jews are victims of it like everybody else. I don't want you to be misrepresented. Henry, I just want to make that clear.
Well, let me put, the reason I can say these things is I'm Jewish myself, and my my grandparents, you know, were murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust, and my parents would have been killed, and had they not been successful in passing as Christians during the Second World War. You know, it's not a, you know, yes, it is a Jewish conspiracy, and yes, I think it's founded in Judaism, but it's since spread, long ago spread beyond Judaism to, you know, through Freemasonry, which, so it's basically not, no longer, you know, Jewish, because Freemasons are, there's 5 million of them, and they're not Jews, most of them aren't Jews. And then Freemasonry has begat liberalism and socialism and communism and Zionism. So, you know, it's spread. It's now essentially all pervasive. And you can see it in the resistance that Trump is, you know, experiencing, and the hysterical reaction of the, you know, what I call the communist, but what people would say the liberal press. But we've got to, you know, I think we've got to realize, I mean, how did we miss that? I mean, the Jews did kill Christ. You know, they want to say, oh, it wasn't the Jews, it was the Romans. No, it was the Jews. And so Judaism, you know, Jews, actually my message is addressed to Jews to wake up. You were associated with an ideology, with a dogma that is in fact very negative and a huge liability to us, because it's a dogma of world domination which brazenly threatens every other nation, race, and religion. Who wants to be part of that? I don't think most Jews would if they thought about it.
I think you're on the money there, Henry, and I want to endorse what you just said, and I want to echo that, because it's vital. Because what they've tried to do is sell this Zionism means all Jewish people nonsense, so that they can call people anti-Semites, and they can call people racist when they talk about the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the cartels that we talked about. And you'll know, Henry, you've been around a few years longer than me, most independent radio and television programs, however big, however small, they won't touch this subject. Because they don't understand it, and because they're terrified of the labels that come with it. But I'm glad that you said that Jewish people have to wake up to what it is, because they're as much victims of it as anybody else. Henry Macko is on the line, henrymacko.com, 29 minutes past the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Europe's most listened to independent radio show, that's a fact, broadcasting on multiple platforms, davidicke.com, Fab Radio in Manchester in the UK, ACR and TuneIn Radio. Book henrymacko.com. book his website and pay attention to his articles. Fascinating stuff. Do you want to spend a couple of minutes, Henry, on the... Because this anti-Semitism thing has reared its head again in the UK, particularly in the last 6 or 8 months, when people talking about the Zionist plan for the greater Israel, when people talking about what Trump has proposed, the embassy being in Jerusalem, and even the boycott Israeli goods movement, people being called anti-Semites and some people losing their jobs. I know you want to talk a bit about this. Go ahead.
Well, to my mind, the only way to defuse anti-Semitism is for Jews to follow my example and unite with their neighbors, who, you know, in the essentially the national cause, in the cause of national independence, and also unite with their neighbors in the cause of supporting the marriage and family, and in supporting true religion. And I regard the New Testament as true religion, Jesus teaching in the new religion, in the New Testament. So I think if people, people look around and, wherever they see someone pushing the globalist agenda, the anti-family agenda, the anti-national, the anti-racial, the migrant agenda, they look around, they see Jews. So yeah, I don't blame them for being anti-Semitic. If Jews are always on the forefront of all these causes, then anti-Semitism is totally justified, because these things are deliberate threats to the other nations and other cultures and other religions. And so Jews should take my example and break away and join with their neighbors in defending those things, defending national independence, and defending religious freedom.
But defending
free speech.
Yeah.
And fighting this whole communist, because it is a communist agenda, which is to basically enforce their thinking, their political correctness, their anti-gender thing, where suddenly it's evil to be a man and a woman. Like, what is that? That is totally satanic, totally occult. That women can't follow their natural feminine instincts, and men can't be men, and women can't be women. That is totally occult. It's grounded in ancient occult teachings.
Henry, before
if Jews want to fight anti-Semitism, they've got to start fighting those the program of the globalist bankers.
I want to talk about the war on gender with you, if you don't mind, in a second. And thanks again for doing it, by the way. I do also want to point out here, and some of my listeners now, they'll say, oh, Richie's being the devil's advocate. No, I'm not. I'm saying this because it's important. While I agree with Henry, I must also point out that tens of thousands of Jewish Orthodox Jews and other Jews regularly march against Zionism and against the Jewish presence in the Middle East. These people must be acknowledged as well. And while Henry's right, is that when people look around and they see the US government and they see the Federal Reserve and they see Jewish people, what they should see is Zionists. They have to make that distinction. Henry Macko is on the line, folks. This is great stuff. It's important. There will not be another radio program right now anywhere in the world talking about these issues. This is the tragedy of our media today.
But Richie, say Zionist, if you look at George Soros, he's actually behind that Iran deal.
Absolutely.
That Iran deal, nuclear deal, wouldn't have happened if Soros wasn't behind it. So you've got, like I say, two branches of the Jews, the communist Jews and the Zionist Jews. And like people like Soros would probably not be called Zionists.
Now, I had Peter Tatchell on the program on Monday. Peter is very famous in the UK for being a proponent of rights for everybody. He's a human rights advocate and he's very consistent. But he is a gay man and he advocates for the rights of LGBT people. So I brought him on the program, Henry, because I'm obviously very annoyed at the pushing of teaching gender identity to children in primary schools, the imposition on children of other children of a different sex coming to use their bathrooms. This is very, very sinister. So I had a proper debate with Peter about this on Monday. Peter was accepting of the fact that, you know, using the pronouns, taking away terms like expectant mother, which is crazy, and all that. He went along with that. He talked about violence, which some transgender people.
I'm really glad you brought this up, Richie.
This is important stuff, this, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, it is. And, heterosexual society really, over the years, hasn't really cared what homosexuals do. But homosexual rights is just a ruse. It's a guise, a disguise for a vicious, vicious attack on heterosexual identity, a vicious attack on gender, which goes on day after day after day. We were born males and females, and we get our sense of identity and purpose from our gender and from the role we play in the family as husbands, wives, brothers, and sisters. This is a vicious psychological attack on heterosexuals that's disguised as homosexual rights. That's a underhanded, vicious attack that we have to resist, because we don't really care what homosexuals do, if they whatever they want to do, but we do care when healthy heterosexuals are being messed up in schools. And also, children, pre-puberty children are being taught, they're being corrupted. They're being actually groomed for pedophiles by being told about sex and told about how to give consent and so on. It's vicious. It's satanic. And we should rise up, aggressively and fight it.
It's everywhere, Henry, isn't it? Isn't it everywhere? Now, even Peter acknowledged this privately to me. It's come out of, over the last couple of years, it is everywhere. And David Icke has said to me many, many times, pay very close attention when something like this props up everywhere, all over the world at the same time. The idea that you would teach, as you said, prepubescent children, you would ask them to choose from a list of 60 gender identities, when less than 1% of any population might have transgender men and women in it. And I echo your sentiment. People should live and let live. Let anybody live the way they want to live and be who they want to be, so long as it doesn't impact on anybody else's life. We should live like that. There's no doubt about that. But when you're seeing this in schools, it's wrong. And I don't even know if you know this, Henry, you probably do, but the British Medical Association has advised doctors in British hospitals to stop saying expectant mother in case they offend transgender people. There's no excuse for that, is there? I mean, you can't find a reason.
How is it that a tiny microscopic minority has rights, but 99.9% of the population have no rights? You know, how dare they use that as an excuse to trample on our rights and our identity? And homosexuality is a dysfunction, but big deal. So is having the flu is a dysfunction. But you don't want to teach a dysfunction. You don't want to perpetuate a dysfunction by teaching children that same-sex attraction is normal and natural. It isn't. Right up until this globalist campaign, society recognized that homosexuality is caused by family dysfunction and abuse, sexual abuse as a youth. I mean, it's documented.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that, Henry. I think we're at different sides of that. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think
it's not natural. If you just read How America Went Gay by Dr. Charles Socarides, it's on my website. Just Google Macko and How America Went Gay. This man treated gays for 40 years in his practice. He was a psychiatrist. I mean, it's not normal. It's not natural. It's due to royal confusion. I'm not saying that these people should be condemned or persecuted or anything, but they should not be. It should not be treated as healthy.
But it also should not be, in my opinion, taught to children as something that's unhealthy. We shouldn't be talking to children about these issues full stop, certainly not in schools. I mean, I know a lot of gay men and women, obviously, Henry, having worked in entertainment and in commercial and national media, I've met many gay men and women, and I've known some of them very well. And they didn't have abuse in the home, and they didn't have dysfunctional families. I think, look, I've heard the arguments over the years about chromosome issues and issues at birth and all this. I'm not sure I subscribe to any of that. But what I do agree with you completely on is we shouldn't be telling children about these things. We should not. I don't think we should normalise anything or denormalise anything. Let children find their own way in the world with their, you know, with good families. But we shouldn't be telling them this is wrong or this is right. It's Henry, I'm going to put this to you. You might not like this, but I'm going to put it to you anyway. I have a theory that this demand for transgender toilets and transgender teaching and all of that, which I completely disagree with, I'm with you on that. I have a theory, Henry. It's not actually coming from transgender men and women at all. It's coming from something more sinister, something more darker. That satanic entities that you talked about earlier on. I think that's what's driving this agenda. And transgender men and women and gay men and women are a vehicle for this nonsense. But I've spoken to gay men and women, and there's even been some very interesting pieces in the British newspapers by gay men totally against this transgender agenda nonsense. So I wonder, is it being driven from somewhere else? And it's not actually coming from transgender men and women. What do you think?
Obviously, I mean, why, after all these years, suddenly this is an issue? I mean, obviously, all these things are totally orchestrated by the media, and behind the media is the CIA, and behind the CIA is Tavistock Institute, where they do their social engineering and their messing up of society. And I just want to add that, you know, I've known a number of gay people in my life, and they're very attractive and talented people, but almost all of them came from dysfunctional families where they're basically, as one gay person said to me, too much mommy and not enough daddy. So I admit that there may be some cases where it happens in the womb. I'm not in favor of persecution or any criticism or any kind of harm. But heterosexuals have to maintain heterosexual norms. And the whole hidden agenda of this so-called gay rights movement is to change societal norms so that 98% of the people conform to 2% of the people, most of whom were either sexually molested or come from dysfunctional homes.
I'm going to challenge you again on that, just because I've never seen any evidence personally that most gay people have come from, you know, a difficult background. Look, I'm not in any way saying that the cases that you knew or the stories of the people you knew, Henry, I'm not impugning you at all, far from it.
Okay, Richard, why don't we just say to our listeners, do some more research and make up your own mind.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Look, you've said already, people should not be discriminated against. They should not have violence committed against them because of their sexual orientation. We should live and let live. We shouldn't concern ourselves what goes on behind somebody's closed door. Let people do whatever they want to do. But I agree with you. There's a fundamental attack on free speech going on here. And there is a programming, there is a situation of programming in our schools. But I still maintain, and I'm glad that you acknowledged it, Henry, it's not coming from gay men and women and transgender men and women. It's coming from something much darker than that.
Absolutely. These homosexual activists are all being financed by big corporations who are in turn controlled by the central bankers.
Henry, what are we going to do about getting the message to people that, you know, there's an alternative vision for what's going on and why it's going on? We're in this era now when this term fake news has been born and it's come into it's come into our daily lives. We understand, Henry, that there is a, there is a parliamentary commission in the UK to look into fake news. Now, you might not be aware of this, but yesterday, the British government, through a committee, summoned executives from Google, from Twitter, and from YouTube to come and speak, schoolboys to be admonished in front of the headmaster in the school. Basically, YouTube, Google, and Twitter were told, you're not doing enough to protect people on social media platforms. You need to clamp down when you see people saying things that are not right. There's an enormous attack going on against the independent media, right? What are we going to do?
It's not going to work as long as the internet remains relatively free, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think most people know that fake news applies to the mainstream media. I mean, you'd have to be brain dead not to see that. I mean, not to see that the mainstream media is totally complicit in 9/11, you know, the murder of 3,000 people, you know, in broad daylight, New York City. I mean, the mainstream media is a joke, and I think most people realize it's a joke, and that all the people who work for mainstream media, most of them are whores. And I think that the masses realize that. I mean, or else Hillary Clinton would have been elected, you know? Obviously, the internet is a major force now. People aren't, you know, the media was 100% against Trump in the most vicious, underhanded way, and they still are, and it's not making much difference because people know that fake news is the mainstream news.
Are you worried, Henry, about the availability of the internet? Because when executives from the big players like Facebook, Google, YouTube, and Twitter are called by politicians and told they must police their sites better, when we hear that certain sites that put out important information might be demonetized, you know, Google might take away their ability to earn a few quid, a few bucks to help their operation run from week to week. This is very serious. Are you worried about that?
Yeah, I am worried about that. I think the seeds have been planted. I think the internet's very hard to police. I think when they try to shut down YouTube, another YouTube will start up. Just like when they censored Reddit, there's now a VOAT. I mean, Twitter, there's a replacement for Twitter coming along called Gab. I think the internet is very, very hard to control and police. I am worried about it. It's going to be a constant battle. But, you know, they use the internet for commerce, so they can't very well shut it down. There's always going to be ways to circumvent censorship. But let's be clear what censorship is. It's communism. It's mind control. It's Satanism. Because human beings need to be free to think what they want and express what their feelings and their thoughts. And anything that, you know, tries to mold Gentile thinking and systems into Jewish molds, because that's the origin of it, has, you know, will be resisted and will be fought and will be overcome.
Henry, it was terrific having you on the program. It's been a long time coming. Thanks for coming on today. I really enjoy chatting with you. I want to give your website details out again. Henry can be found at Henry Macko, that's MAKOW, henrymacko.com. Bookmark it, read his articles on there, and there's a lot of information, talks and interviews with Henry on YouTube. Just put his name into YouTube there. Really enjoyed it, Henry. Thanks for sharing your time with us.
I enjoyed it too. Thanks very much, Richie.
Great stuff. Henry Macko on the line to us there from his home. Go to his website, henrymacko.com. Lovely. Exactly 11 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. We are going to take a very quick break. When we come back, lots of tweets, understandably. So we'll read some of those, and we're fast running out of time.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Yes, Dubai Traffic 2. Really interesting tweets coming in. Heraclitus. Wow, any more proof needed that the current guest has an agenda against gays? No, what is his problem, says Heraclitus. Catherine tweets, refreshing that Henry isn't scared to speak his views. Anne Selly, my friend, tweets, there are countless examples of gay animals. Explain that, says Anne. David tweets, I've got lots of dear gay friends. Henry has a point about strong mothers, etc. Seems to often be the case. Look, I don't have to explain my opinion on this, and I don't have to constantly keep interrupting guests to make the point of my opinion, because you know what my opinion is. I don't agree with Henry's assertion that gay people were sexually abused. I don't agree with that at all. I just don't agree with it. There's no evidence of it. Now, the second most important man in my life was my mentor, Billy McCarthy, who died in Waterford last year. Billy was one of the best broadcasters ever produced by Ireland, and Billy was a gay man, very interesting man. Billy, he was in the priesthood, and he left the priesthood because he couldn't reconcile his sexuality. He couldn't live a hypocritical life, and Billy left the priesthood, and he was in a relationship with his partner Des for many, many, many years. And Des is often in my thoughts because he's obviously still grieving for his partner, the love of his life. I don't share those opinions. I really don't, and I don't think I need to keep making the point that I don't. I need only say it once, and I did say it to Henry, I don't agree with that. You know, there's no evidence to support that. Gay people are gay people because that's the way they are, and they should be subject to the same rights, human rights, as everybody else. They really should be. Where I agree with Henry is on this transgender nonsense. Now, there is no evidence to suggest that it is a genuine biological condition, that some people are born in the wrong body. There is no evidence. Now, does that mean that you demonise people who are transgender and you demonise a man or a woman who wants to live as the opposite sex to that which they were born? No, you don't. Let them do whatever they want. Don't humiliate them. Don't deny them access to a job, to a life. Don't do that. None of your bloody business. Okay? Treat them as you would anybody else. But this agenda in schools, and I read out so many examples to Peter Tatchell on Monday, this is sinister because there is a war on gender. But it's not a homosexual war against gender. Gay men and women are not party to this, don't support this. The article in the Mail was by Andrew Pearce, the very clever conservative commentator. I think he's an arsehole most of the time, Andrew Pearce. But, you know, he was bang on the money on this. But it's look, we invite people on this program all the time. We've got important and interesting things to say, even people we disagree with. It's as simple as that. I don't agree with Henry's use of it's a Jewish conspiracy. I don't agree with that. It's a Zionist conspiracy. And Zionism is a secret society. Well, it was started as a secret society. But Henry's got a lot of really smart and fascinating insights. Is it true that he doesn't like gay people? It might very well be. But I'm not going to deny him access to this programme. I will make the point once, maybe twice, to any guest who makes those assertions like Henry did and say, look, I don't agree with that. And then we move on. But if you're a gay man or woman and you were annoyed by that, I'm sorry that you were annoyed, but I don't agree with Henry on that point. And I'm sure, obviously, you don't either. So we just move on and we talk about other matters and subjects, which we did. We covered a lot, by the way, in that particular conversation. Right, that's about it for the programme. Big thanks to Henry Macko for coming on. I enjoyed him. I'll invite him back on again. And a huge thanks as well to Steve Keane for coming on in the first. They're fascinating conversations, and they will be archived on podcast in about 15 minutes time, the repeat cycle, all of that. And Simon will have the interviews on YouTube in the early AM tomorrow. That is it for today. Senator Richard Black is among the guests tomorrow, Thursday. Thanks to Simon for YouTube, Simon Stewart, that is, and to Aaron Callan for the work on the Richie Allen website, which will progress. And from next week, articles will appear on the website. Some of them will infuriate you. Some of them won't. Some of them you will agree with. Some of them you won't bother reading. But that's good as well. All of that coming on the brand new richieallen.co.uk. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you for your interest in the programme. Thanks for listening, even when you don't agree with people. It's the only way, right? It's the only way. I've been Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow at 7 p.m. GMT for Thursday's show. Bye now. They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie. Charge the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always
taxi took my girl away. Now don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? To be paradise, put up a parking lot.